Hey guys, this is Come Date with Kate, and I am joined today with Kane. Hello, how are you?
I'm really good. Thank you for having me on. It's good to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Kane.
So my name's Kane Parrish. I'm an educator, a writer, and a relationship coach. And I've been in the field for about between 8 and 10 years, depending on who you ask. And I just hang out, write, try and teach.
A little bit of everything. You've definitely been a therapist for me over the years.
Yeah, look, try and help where I can. I do my best.
I think it's kind of funny, the story of like how we met, because it was just an odd situation. And from my perspective, I remember being a little bit too turnt when we first met each other for the first time. But before all this, like writing, what you were working in that like bar type industry for a little while.
Yeah, so, you know, it's the classic sort of starving artist trope where you've got your day job, your main source of income, and then you're sort of funding your passion projects by night or what have you. And at the point in time that we met, I was working at a bar trying to just, you know, make ends meet. And look, I mean, I've been known to have one or two drinks behind the bar every now and again, but I certainly probably wasn't as inebriated as you were when we ran into each other for the first time.
Do you remember what I wore when I first met you?
It was, I'm pretty sure it was a cowgirl outfit that was like black and white patterned.
Cow, yeah, like a cow skirt.
Yeah, like something out of 101 Dalmatians or something like that, right? Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I remember that.
And a cowboy hat. It was my 21st birthday. It was 2 years ago. Yeah, not that long ago because I just turned 23. And we had done, I had planned a club crawl with like my, at the time I only had one friend, which was my brother's partner, and we had gone around to every single bar, and I was in my zone that night. I don't know what was going on, but the energy that I was producing was, I reckon, magnetic.
It was certainly eye-catching. I just remember it being really loud and really hard to not notice, especially because there were about 5 people in the bar total.
Yeah.
And you were making a lot more noise than all of the rest of them put together. So it was hard not to look at you, you know what I mean?
And then from there, obviously, we have sort of been on this like upward spiral. We very close, we kind of drift away, we come back, we've had partners in between. But I think we've always kind of found our feeding and sort of found our way back to each other. And it's sort of like, now it's just like this, I don't know, I can call you and I just want to talk to you and just see how you're going.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, relationships are very fluid and cyclical, and things sort of drift in and out. And whether it's romantic, whether it's platonic, like, these things sort of just persist, you know. If two people want to stay in each other's lives, then they will. And that's just kind of how that works.
And I think I've taken you for a ride in some aspects, I do believe that. And I feel really bad, but I think that it proved that you've seen me in my worst, you've seen me at my best, and now this sort of like stable, more mature version of myself you get to see now. It's like another part of myself. So,
what's really interesting, you have a lot of the same values and a lot of the same wants and needs, and you care about similar things, but your priorities and your execution has changed, and I can see a different kind of focus in you, and it's really interesting.
Aww. Thanks. I feel happy about that. Thank you. Thank you. Now, obviously, I invited you on here today because we do have a lot of history with each other, and it's sort of highlighting our sort of history of what we've had, but also sort of, you are a lifestyle coach. You are a love like expert about things. Your day, I can't even think of the words, what I'm trying to say, but your day to day is sort of being this leader in a field of directing people to, I don't know what the word is, but you know, I can call you and you're always good for advice because you know exactly what to do. And I think when I asked you to be on this podcast, I was really excited because it's a completely brand new perspective. It's literally a professional sitting on my podcast right now. How lucky am I? So I'm very excited, and I just, yeah, want to say thank you before we get into the questioning. But because it is that your first time, I just want to sort of get to know a little bit about you. What do you do in your spare time? What's going on? If someone was listening and didn't know anything about you, who are you? Obviously, you are all those things that you've introduced yourself before, but who are you, Kane?
I mean, that's a really good question. I think probably at this point only my therapist really knows. But look, I mean, I like a lot of things. I like good food. I like, you know, having a drink every now and again. I try and get my training in where I can. I've just set up and bought a exercise bike so I can be one of those people that just like pedals into thin air in the middle of their living room, which is, I don't know how I feel about that necessarily, but while I wait for it to get a bit cooler here in terms of the climate and stuff like that, so I can go run around outside, this is about what we're doing. So yeah, I just picked up capoeira. I've you know, got a couple hobbies. I work as a marketing manager occasionally, you know, just when I feel like it. And yeah, I don't know, I am the sum of my parts. I try and just be as much as I can for myself and for the people around me, and that's really all there is to it.
You know what it reminded me of? Have you ever seen Glee?
Like, I've seen, I think, the first episode, and then I realized that probably wasn't the show for me, and I switched it off.
I was going to say there's a scene, and some people are going to get it, and some people don't, where, like, Rachel Berry's on the treadmill, and she's, like, in the morning, she's, like, every day I wake up at 7:40 on the treadmill, just looking at the bike right now. I can picture that. I'm like, oh yeah.
Look, I literally bought the TV that was sitting immediately next to so that I had something to stare at while I'm on the bike. So it was, you know, you could say I'm quite committed to this particular cause at this point. So
slay.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Hey, you do what you got to do to be fit, you know?
100%. Well, I'm going to let you get into asking me a question.
Okay. Well, I mean, it depends. Do you want a softball? Do you want a hard one?
Let's start small. Let's start small, all right? I know you can hurt me right now. I know these questions can fuck me up, but please.
That's certainly not my intention. But, okay. All right, sure. Let's go with a soft one then.
Okay.
All right. Well, we've had a lot of experiences and a lot of particular highlights and lowlights and, you know, gone around a couple cycles with one another.
Yeah.
What was your favorite experience that we shared together?
You fucker, I put this in my questions for you.
Sucks to suck, man. I don't know what to tell you.
I think my favorite thing is obviously when we had first started, I was chasing you like a dog. Mm-hmm. I was full, like, like you said, it swaps between us. It's like I either chase you and then I go, nah, and then you come back and it's this back and forth. But I remember one night I'd closed up, because I also worked in the bar scene, I'd closed up the bar, and it was like one night that we could spend together. And I was like, all right, let's hang out. And then we both looked at each other and were like, yeah, I'm exhausted. I'll just take you back home. I was like, I'll take you back home. Don't worry about catching like a bus. All good. So went back to your house and we just sat outside your house for probably, I reckon it was an hour and a half to 2 hours. And that was our first kiss that we had.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember sitting in that car and just being stuck in the middle of wanting to go inside and not wanting to go inside and really wanting to just go home and sleep, and also just like really being quite present and interested in that moment as it was happening. And I just, yeah, that was, I don't know, it was different. I don't often find myself in those situations.
Or I was going to say, there was another one where we were laying in your bed and you were beatboxing and I was rapping.
That you didn't good. Let me test the microphone. I would have laid something down for you. But.
Oh my God. Yeah, it was. That was another fond memory of mine, to like just literally be in this like moment of like nothing and just us being weird. That was just our thing. Yeah. Crazy. Stole my question. Fuck you. How would you rate our mental connection from 1 to 10, and why? Like,
that's a really interesting question. Yeah. And I'm assuming 10 being like soulmate, like twin flame, mm-hmm. you know, like couldn't, you know, spend more than a moment apart from you kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. I would say it depends on when we catch each other, you know? Because we've really struggled to be into each other at the same time as one another. And I think if we ever lined up, I would put it at somewhere like a 7 or an 8 or something like that.
Yeah.
And then when we sort of fall off the bandwagon and we're, you know, chasing different things or prioritizing different things, we still have a really strong foundation of like a personal connection. But because we're looking in two different directions, there's a little more conflict there, and that makes it harder. And so that sort of ranges anywhere from like a 4 to a 6, depending on the day, I guess. Like, we've had disagreements and stuff before, or like prioritize different stuff. And, yeah. You know, it flies all over the place from where I'd be like, oh my God, like this is, you know, really interesting being with someone that's so similar to me in so many ways and then so different to me in a bunch of ways.
It's, yeah. Wow. Oh, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I do. I'm just sitting here like, oh.
Were you expecting a different answer?
No, I think this is why I like had this attraction from you in the beginning, is the way that you can just be, what's the word for it? So in depth with how you explain things. It's like very refreshing because your communication is always on point.
Mm.
When you explain something, you go to the depth, way to the depth, and I really like that. It made me feel really good about myself. Thank you.
I have, whether it's a luxury or a curse, of thinking about these things too much. And
yeah.
So we're cursed to hear the long explanations instead of the short answers. So, you know.
Just always the way.
If you're happy, I'm happy, I guess.
No, but that was lovely. I thought that was really nice. I didn't expect that, but I'm going to delete that question from my list. I came prepared with a list of questions. And he's got not even a list. How do you remember all the questions you want to ask? I can't.
It's helpful that we have like a relationship. If it was something that I just brought to a podcast with someone I'd never met before, then sure, maybe it would be a little less personal and I'd have to write stuff down. But this is stuff that I'd ask you if we weren't being recorded. So it's not as if this is like a foreign concept, you know?
Yeah, true. True, true, true.
Speaking of which...
No!
Well, okay, so we've talked about relationship styles a lot, and we've gone backwards and forwards on what each of us sort of want from the other person and what we prefer, just generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at the point where you have felt comfortable talking to me and sort of exposing me to your love life, just as a general concept.
Mm-hmm.
How do you reconcile that with the idea of us having history together, or there being potentially some sort of future there, or a connection of some description?
I can't comment on what the future will look like or who I'm meant to be with or what's going on. Is it more the question that you're directing towards like this podcast and talking about people that I've seen beforehand and having that?
Or it's one of those things where like, because you know that I'm interested or speak about polyamory in a reasonable amount of depth. So I have a lot of experience talking to my partners about other people that we have seen in the past or are currently seeing.
Yeah.
Like that jealousy or that potential for damaging the intimacy is something that's a hurdle I've already overcome.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if that's something that you have thought about at all or experienced in any way.
Polyamory? No, I can't. I couldn't do it. And purely, I used to sit there and it sounds very hypocritical, Kane, because I used to say, well, I can't comment on what I'm going to be like in 10, 15 years time from now. That potentially could be something I would be interested in, but I don't know that because every day I wake up as a different person. Well, I believe. Like, it's not, it's still me, but it's like, something I could think as not as acceptable now could be acceptable later on. So
sure.
It's really hard for me to comment and be like, yeah. But also, I like what I have and I don't like people having that. That's just me. I just can't overcome that. But if it was something that was going to save a marriage or do something, or if it was like a desire and it comes to a communication point with a future husband or a future partner, then maybe I might be open to it, but I can't comment or say yes or no to that question because it just depends on who I am when that happens.
And that's fair.
Yeah.
And usually when you're, you know, in the place to share those sorts of things, it's because you, in that moment, I guess, believe that we are what we are to one another, and that's not going to be an issue at that point in time. Fair enough, you know?
100%. I've got to ask you, we're talking a lot of positivity here.
Yeah.
But I want to ask, what is your worst memory of me?
Worst memory.
And it could be like something I've done that agitated you, or it could be because there was times where we've agitated each other, there's times where we depended on each other, but I want it to be whether you saw me upset and that was your worst memory of me, or I really upset you. Either or.
Okay, well, the one thing that jumps out to me, and I don't remember the context of the conversation at all.
I'm scared.
It was one of those moments where everything that you were saying and all of the like standpoints you were taking made a lot of sense, but it wasn't very conducive to like a two-way relationship. You know, like we were talking about something. I can't remember what it was. It was probably like a really insignificant like conversation or something. I don't even know if it would be an argument. But you came at it from the perspective of like, oh, this is what I want, and this, you know, are these things are important to me, and that means that I should act in this particular way.
Yeah.
And that I want someone to want me for me. And that means that they just have to get on board with the things that I like and the things I choose and the things I prioritize, which I agree with to a certain extent, but it also doesn't make for very good communication. Like, you can't compromise with someone when you're stuck that firmly in that mindset.
Yeah.
And I just remember really being frustrated by that and not being able to try and like find a halfway point or like meet you in the middle somewhere or try and, you know, take some liberties to make some space for us to both be happy instead of just like, you know, my way or the highway. And that really, that did annoy me a little bit at the time.
Yeah. Do you think that was, I'm trying to guess when that was. Was that when I was quite young, like 21, before my relationships that I've had in that time?
I think it's one of those things that you've always had that attitude to some extent when you're like dealing with prospective relationships.
Yeah.
Like, you want the person that you end up sort of getting involved with to be a pretty strict match for you in a lot of ways, and there's not a lot of wiggle room in that.
Yeah.
It probably does depend on the context. It was probably when we were a little bit younger, to the point that you know, might have been just before you ended up growing and developing in a few ways.
A lot of ways, yeah. And I get where you're coming from. It's, I think when you're in context of a relationship, and especially I think that part was probably before I was in a relationship, so I really didn't have this perspective of what it was to compromise or how to communicate until I was put in a situation where I was forced to do those things. But now, give or take, yeah, look, there's aspects that I want in people, but do I understand that I'm the best in that context? Absolutely not. There is things that I need to fix. And that's why I'm taking my time and obviously having podcasts and songs. But it's just a just continuing. Like, I can't, if I don't have these situations where I don't get told these things, or, you know, oh, maybe that didn't sit well with you, I can't grow. I can't grow as a person.
Yeah, so that's fair.
I love hearing that because it makes me go away and be like, maybe I'm asking too much, or, you know.
It's one of those sore spots for me, both personally and from like my platform in general. I think that it would be a lot easier for a lot of people to date. And this is like from, you know, both a male and female standpoint. I think both genders are pretty guilty of this in a lot of ways, where the standards that we decide for ourselves are really strict and really inflexible when we're put in situations where it would probably be pretty reasonable to try and meet someone halfway on them. You know, like, it's one thing to say like, okay, I want a partner who's, you know, nice to me and respects me and doesn't cheat on me. Those are all pretty, you know, you can be pretty strict on those. I don't see an issue with that. But when you're talking about someone that, I don't know, has certain things in common with you or likes to communicate in a certain style or has some preferences, you know, these are just things that make us people. And part of a relationship is shifting into a position where you can both meet those things in the middle and indulge whatever we like and what we don't like in a, you know, more healthy way that doesn't bother our partner. And I think it's really part of like just developing a good relationship and having good relationship skills to navigate around some of those conflicts rather than just cut and run at the first sign of like a not 100% perfect match.
Yeah.
That's something I care about a lot. And yeah, I see that a bit too often for my taste. So.
Ah, yes. No, that's understandable. But yeah, no, I think that's a really good perspective. And for those, maybe someone's listening to this and thinking, oh, maybe the reason why I'm not settling, or maybe I can't find my perfect match, is maybe I'm expecting too much, or maybe I'm picking out things with people and not really looking at the things that make them who they are.
Yeah, I would never think of it as settling or not settling. I think it's a matter of trying to decide what your deal breakers are. And if you are truly like a homebody and you find someone that's, you know, an like outdoorsy person and they are not willing to like compromise and you're not willing to compromise, then yeah, that can be a deal breaker. Like, if you really just are not someone that likes going outside, then fair play to you. Find someone that, you know, matches you on that. But there are a lot of things that are seen as red flags or particular standards that people are afraid to try and just like have a conversation about and try and get around in a pretty easy manner. Like, they forget their partner is a human being too and is probably looking at it in the same lens that they are. All they want is a productive, healthy, happy relationship, and you work together on that. That's literally the whole point. You know, they're not on the other side, they're on your side.
Yeah. Beautiful. I like that answer. I can't remember who was, did I ask you a question or did you ask me a question?
You were trying to work out what my least favorite memory of you was. I think that was how that whole thing kicked off.
Least favorite memory. So yep. I asked you that. Yep. Okay. All right. Now I'm scared for your questions. They scared me.
All right. Well, you talked about how, well, sorry, you asked me what I thought of our mental connection.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about our physical connection?
Yeah, I think when we were in that motion of like this build up of like, oh, you know, what's the word for it? Like we were so back and forth for so long that with that tension had built up for a long time. Like I think we weren't physical till probably a year later because you had a relationship in between.
Yep.
And then, yeah. And I sort of had this, when we had that split, I sort of was agitated at you for some reason. So I think that build up for a while, I would rate it 7 to 8. I think that I need now, knowing who I am, I need a real deep emotional connection. I find emotional connection something that I hold quite within, too close to me. And I think that after a while, it was just, I got to a point where I was like, I don't think we're there on the same level anymore. I think it fizzled out. And I think that's why I was like, there is a special part of you because I hold you very dear and close to me. But it was just sort of like, I don't think we match that same energy anymore. I think I came to that realization.
And not that I'm advocating for it or anything, but this was never something you tried to address with me in a attempt to fix.
Yeah.
That was not something you wanted to try and like mend at any point.
I think because I was so selfish and focused on myself for a little while, to be honest. And I think I have been focused on myself for a little while. I don't really put physical attraction with people over who I am anymore. Whereas beforehand, I kind of used it as a validation point, and I don't think that's a healthy way of living.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people sleep with just other people for the sake of, I guess, like mutual masturbation, essentially.
Yeah.
Like you're doing that not because you're head over heels for the other person or you know, are looking for one particular person specifically. It's just like that could be almost anyone at that point. They're just feeling a need at that stage, which like there's not necessarily anything wrong with that, but it pays to be aware of those kinds of things, I guess.
Absolutely. And that's on me for not communicating that to you. But the thing is, to be honest, I think my communication style has just got a lot better over the last couple of months. Like it's taken probably a solid year of just being alone and sort of being in my own thoughts, and like even communication between coworkers and stuff like that about conflicts. I couldn't even do it for ages. I was too scared. I'd rather take the hit, not talk about it, or just not talk to them at all. And I'm like, that's not fixing anything. It's not getting you anywhere. We have to communicate. So I think that's where I was for a little while, where it's like, I think this has fizzled out. But I couldn't tell you, and I didn't want you to just have that association that it was just a physical attraction thing. So I wanted to keep you as long because it was more to me than that.
Well, yeah, because we talked about a lot of things, and that's why that's sort of a hard thing to reconcile, was we talked about a lot of emotional concepts between the two of us, and then there was a very separate physical element, and that's just really interesting for me. I never really... I personally, because I can't unentwine the two of them, it's unusual for me to hear about somebody that considers those very like distinct and separate.
Yeah, of course. Because and how I put it in perspective of that, which splitting it, right, I could go out on a date with a guy, connect mentally with them, be mentally attracted to them, really indulge, really like who they are, but then I could just be like, I could meet someone and just be like, nah, it's just sexual attraction, see you later, bye. Mm-hmm. Have completely wipe out the thought of actually having a proper connection with that person. I think I learned to split it when I was alone and when I was forcing myself to go on dates with people to make me feel better about myself.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
That's like, you caught me. I remember you had asked me out last year and I had said I couldn't do it because like, I was just in this mindset of like, I just want to be alone. I don't want anyone. I just like, I need to be alone. That was this mindset that I was going through. But before that, I had forced myself out on many, many dates. And you would get this. I feel like you'd relate to this in some way. That when you're not 100% like on the ball or know exactly what you want, when you go on these dates, you provide people with the wrong idea. And then they start to think, oh, maybe it's something more. And because I was terrible at communication, do you think I could tell them, actually, I don't feel anything at all towards you? I couldn't. I let a lot of people on, and that's why I had that time to sort of like go away, refresh, revamp, and figure out who Caitlin was, because I lost that for so long.
That makes sense. It is one of those things that I do relate to that a little bit, but it is a problem that I've sort of seen the other side of, because it's a very common issue where people that have struggled to find what their standards are and to decide what they actually want and try and pursue things that they care for and actually desire more than just a like filling a hole with,
mm-hmm.
find it really difficult to go on a date and then at the end of that date say like, hey, this probably isn't going anywhere. Like, I don't think this was a good fit. It's a really foreign concept for a lot of people, like turning people down and like saying no to bad connections or just even mediocre ones is a skill into a, like itself. And most people don't pick that up necessarily.
Yeah, but you would think that if, can I just put this in perspective? I actually saw it off context, but context of the story. I went and saw a comedian on Saturday night and he was saying about how he went on a date and this guy turned around at the end of the date and said to him, I didn't feel a connection. He goes, no shit, I was there. Deep down, regardless of if you think that things are going well, you know, your gut tells you. Your gut will tell you that it's not it.
It's really easy if two people both think that a date sucked. You get into trouble when you think the date sucked and they don't.
Yeah,
that happens all the time. That's an incredibly like common thing because, you know, it's essentially a coin flip. Mm-hmm. You know, you're taking two people that have either never met before or only a handful of times and putting them in a position where the implication is that something will probably come of that, or that, you know, hopefully something could continue further. And if you have decided that it's a flop or they've exhibited things that you consider deal breakers that they don't know about or that they don't like consider significant, it's going to be really hard for you to just put your foot down and say like, no, you had positive qualities,
mm-hmm.
but you also had negative qualities or mediocre qualities. And that's not something that gets me excited to the point that I would just put myself out there and do this wholeheartedly. You know, it's, I'm never gonna, that's just not happening, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I think as well, sometimes it might not even be about bad qualities or good qualities. The person could just not physically, like, could not like meet you in a standard of what you find interesting. Like, you can go on a date with someone, and I don't know if you've been on the date where you go, I don't really think this person has anything that they've got going on. Like, they're just here, they're present, and yeah, we're having a conversation, but they haven't got anything. Like, what is, I look for like something. What are you passionate about? What do you like to do? Is it, do you have a podcast where you go and tell people about, you know, your love life? Or do you play a musical instrument? Do you play in a band? Do you do boxing on the weekends? Something interesting. Whereas nowadays, just off topic, I feel like nowadays, not a lot of people have something that they look forward to on a weekend or what they do, or they're just in this loop of, I don't know if it was something after COVID or what it was, but I'm finding that a lot of people my age and when I potentially go out dating don't have that. That's something that they love to do, that they're passionate about. And they,
yeah, I don't
about.
I don't actually think I agree with that.
Really? Okay, that's fine.
I think that everybody has something that they care about. But the problem with it is that on a date, the standard for which you can talk about your passion
mm-hmm.
is pretty high. Like the bar that you have to clear for it to be like an attractive quality versus something that's just like a thing you're talking about mm-hmm. is pretty significant, you know? Like, okay, if a guy was the like really passionate about like darts, like just playing darts, like he would go to random bars and stuff and he plays darts. Like,
yeah,
that is something that he could be passionate about. And if mm-hmm. he communicates that well and sort of expresses that in a really like interesting way, I could totally see that working. But the problem is most people are not going to take the time to try and like communicate themselves in that way. They're probably thinking more about darts than they are about how to market themselves talking about darts, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Like, if you've got passions and your passions are just drinking or playing video games or watching Netflix, like those are still things you're passionate about or things you enjoy or things you look forward to, but they're not attractive qualities. You're not putting that in your Tinder bio. You're not like going out on a date and advertising those things.
Yeah.
So like, you know, if you don't value certain things, it's going to be really easy to ignore other people being passionate about them. Or just sort of diminish the importance of that to them. Or yep. at the very least, you just don't find that attractive. Because that's totally fair. I don't know that I'd find someone that like 24/7 watched, you know, old 1980s movie reruns particularly attractive. Even if that was like something they were deeply, deeply interested in.
Yeah. No, I get you. I get you, and I understand your perspective. But I don't know. I don't know what it is. I'm attracted to, like, light, if that makes sense. I'm a fucking moth. Let's just say I'm a moth. There's a light bulb on. I'm there. I'm attracted to it. But it's just, like, to me, and it sounds so cliche in the way that if I'm going on a date with someone and they go, you know what? I really love collecting the 1980s films. Hmm. I love it. She's just like, I love doing it. I love going and doing this. I'd be like, that's so attractive because that you, the way you talk about it and the way you express how you feel about something shows so much about a person. Hmm. I truly believe. If we just, if someone said to you, yeah, I just watch movies, into comparison of, yeah, I collect older movies and I really enjoy film and potentially something that's going to be something that I want to do later in life. How much more interesting does that conversation go?
Yeah, but then you're describing someone's just like pastime or their hobby versus like an ambition or a particular like passion. They're like indulging themselves in it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just a quality that you might value or find really attractive. And assuming that it's not something that everyone has is probably not the best way to go about it versus everybody just not being really good at expressing it. Okay. Or maybe they don't care about it enough to want to express it, you know? Tons of people are pretty comfy with their station in life. They have their routine. They go out, they do whatever they do. They come home, they do whatever they do at home. That's it. They don't feel the need to talk about it. They don't imagine their life going anywhere significant. And, you know, that's cool for some people. You know, I don't like it personally, and I certainly think you probably wouldn't, but is what it is for a lot of people.
What do you think is the problem at the moment with the dating world and everything like that?
Just like broadly speaking, like just the culture of it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that we're in a position that we've never been in before in history. We have unprecedented amounts of information and access to other people. And that has inflated the pool of options and the things that we get to look for or criticize about other people by exponential factors that we've not been used to.
Yeah.
If you go back like pre-internet or even just like as many as 20 years ago, give or take, the amount of people that you had access to date was pretty much whatever you were exposed to within your city. And then that was about it. You know, you didn't have like people traveling in and out. You didn't just randomly stumble across them on Tinder. You didn't find out what you were supposed to like and dislike. You didn't find someone else's red flags on TikTok and think like, oh, maybe that's a good idea that I should look out for them.
Yeah.
You just, your relationships were an organic product of what you had in your life. And that was it. And that was for good and for bad. You know, it made people a lot more interested in building those connections, but it also got people exposed to a lot of shitty stuff that they probably didn't need to get exposed to.
100%.
I just think we've swung too far in the other direction where it's too transactional, too rigid, and honestly too selfish. It's really easy for people to just say like, nah, you've not ticked every 7 of my like 49 different boxes. You're out the door. I'm not having it. I will cycle through as many men as I need to get through or as many women as I need to get through in order to find the one person that ticks every single criteria that I'm looking for. And because we have pretty much access to as many people as we could ever dream of, we have the luxury to do that. But it's doing so much damage to our relationships and so much damage to our mental state.
I think even communication aspects, like from a perspective, like, the good thing about it now is it skips the bullshit, right? There is good parts to it and there is also bad parts to it, but it skips the bullshit of like people can put exactly what they're looking for. If they are looking for casual or if they're looking for long term, like you said, they can flick through and find the people that will match that sort of aspect. Or you have the people that are the floaters, technically, of what I call, but they have no fucking clue what they want. They're sort of in this like, I'm going to swipe and swipe until I find something that's worthwhile. And I personally like that because I know that if somebody is in it for one thing, it's not going to necessarily be my thing. So see you later.
And that's really cool. It's just, that would work if everybody was playing by the rules and being really like good faith about it.
Yeah, but they're not.
Exactly. They're not. 90% of people on Tinder don't ever talk to or meet anybody off of the app. You know, like pretty much like 9 times out of 10, when you match with someone, that conversation is going nowhere. And that could be for a number of reasons like compatibility, you know, profile issues. They might have something else going on in their life, or they could just literally be using that whole cycle for validation. That's a pretty common thing that happens to both men and women, is people just getting on the app to see what they can get and then uninstalling it without doing anything.
Yeah.
And that harms the overall experience for the people that are looking for genuine connections, that are going on there to try and actually like look at the profile and be like, okay, they say they're interested in long term. Mm. That means that if they and I match, then both of us are heading into this with good intentions.
Yeah.
It would be really nice if that were the case, but that generally doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't. And I think, like you said, it is a validation standpoint. People don't go on it now to really search for something. They go on it for primarily more validation than anything, because your Tinder, everything, you're on display. It's a gallery of yourself. Mm. You're putting your best photos up front for everyone to see. Do you think people go to the bio and read the bio before they look at your face? No.
Hell no.
Nah, they're going swipe, no, yep, no, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah, and the amount of damage that that's doing to people's self-esteem and self-image and just their overall impression of what the dating market is like is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I had the worst time on Tinder for ages, you know?
Yeah.
It's really hard to figure out what makes a good profile and what makes it possible for you to put your own best foot forward.
Yeah.
And the results that you get when you just go out and try and meet people organically in real life and have face-to-face connections instead of just relying primarily on digital stuff, night and day. The difference is black and white. It's ridiculous.
Can I say something to you? Because obviously you worked in the bar and we've spoken about this before. You've met a lot of people. You've met a lot of friends. You've made a lot of connections in that bar, because obviously I would be sitting here right now.
Mm.
But do you believe that the old-fashioned way of meeting people in the sand, I call it the sand, but in the sand, up front, you know exactly what they look like, you know their personality, who they are, it's not hidden, it's all on display straight away, their body language, because you can't tell someone's body language or what their interests are by typing them or looking at the fact that they've gone to Bali 4 times a year, you know what I mean? It's more... I enjoy more meeting people in person than what I do on Tinder or dating apps. And I tell you right now, my best connections are the people that I have met in person.
Yeah, 100%.
AKA yourself. There's other people I've met. I personally would love to have something more involved, and maybe this might be something later down the lines, of having like a blind dating session. Renting out a place, singles, come, like, talk to each other, be old-fashioned, kissing booths, fuck it, who cares, no one gives a fuck, it's 2024, so I feel like I wish there was more for the people that feel not validated through those apps. I feel like there's more things, but then their self-esteem and their confidence, they may not even show up to places like that, because they've already been destroyed from being on dating apps and being on Tinder and reaching out and not getting anything back.
Yeah, that's a massive issue, is that by adventing all of these new forms of technology that have supposedly replaced the way that we met people, you have met with a whole generation of people that have lost the ability to go out and do those things in person.
Mm.
Like, I went to a, you know, new martial art class recently, and it was astonishing how many of those people in there were just nice, genuine human beings. It was really easy to just make friends because I could just talk to people about an interest that we shared.
Yeah.
And that was it. It wasn't complicated. There wasn't a bunch of layers on top of it. I didn't have to scroll through a million other people to get there. I just showed up. I took them at face value. They did the same for me, and it was nice. That was pleasant. That was a nice thing that happened.
Yeah. It's, you gotta be, but the thing in that perspective as well, and something I personally learned, you've got to be open to meeting people. If you come in and you've just got like, your energy and the way you project yourself is like, don't talk to me, I don't want anything, I don't want to talk to anyone, no one will be in your circle. If that's something you really crave, but you project a different energy, you will not bring the people that are meant to meet you into your circle. As soon as I, like, and it took a while, as soon as I kind of broke down my barriers, I actually had to hang out with a friend who's the most sociable friend, always talking to random strangers. They could literally be yelling and screaming at a mirror reflection of themselves, and she's full having a conversation with them. She takes everyone exactly how they are. It wasn't until I met her till I realized to be able to open up myself to people. And that's when I met a lot of people. That's when I met a lot of friends that, you know, I wouldn't have now, that would be at my birthday party. All the people that were at my birthday party, met them in person.
Mm.
Which is crazy to me.
Yeah, and I think you even hit the nail on the head. If you actually stop and look at who's in your life and how long they've been there for and the value of those connections, most of them come from putting yourself out there in places that have nothing to do with technology or apps or the internet or anything like that.
Correct.
And accelerating the amount of people that I could meet through my job was, it taught me 15 years worth of social skills and interpersonal concepts in, you know, the amount of time that I was there, which was, I think, only a handful of years.
Can you tell me, obviously, I'm going to give you a question right at you. Can you tell me your worst experience being behind the bar?
I mean, that's a very broad question.
Because the way you were situated, I understand, because I was only like, you worked literally, I reckon, a 5 minute walk down the road. It was 5 minutes from where I worked.
Oh, yeah.
To yours. So same street, same every
same clientele, same shithole atmosphere.
I actually remember once I was at a karaoke bar and there was this older man singing and I had sent a Snapchat to Kane and I was like, have a look at this. This guy's like full ripping it. And you're like, that's a local client at the pub. I still remember that. I was like, no way. He's like, you know, he's busting it up on stage.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I remember that dude. He was strange then and he's probably strange now. Oh.
One of them wore a hat that was like a digital hat and he kept saying pussy now. And it just kept like...
People do the weirdest shit.
And he was like in his 60s and 70s and it was literally like an LED. You know like those signs where the letters like move and they keep like moving around?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like that, but the hat was like pussy now. That was literally it.
I can't imagine waking up in the morning and deciding that's what I'm going to do with my evening. You know, like just go out and intentionally have to program that into the LEDs and like set that to auto rotate and be like, oh, it's probably not fast enough. I don't think people can read that it was pussy that I actually wanted.
It's just like, today it's going to be pussy now. And so next day, titties.
Yeah, it could have been anything.
Titties
now. We caught him on a bad day, apparently.
But yes, so your bar. Tell me what is a core memory from working in the bar scene, because I've got a couple, but I feel like you would be worse.
So they're all on a pretty common theme, to be honest. Like there were a ton of experiences, as any hospitality or retail person mm-hmm. knows, that like any customer facing job for that matter is just kind of a shit show. And I mean, the good thing about working in a bar is that it is a consistent environment with like a captive audience, essentially. Like if you're having a good time with someone, they've really not got like, there's not a lot of room in there. You know, you can actually get to know someone because they've not got like three floors of dance floors to go down. There's not like, you know, a whole festival going on. Like they're in your venue for as long as they're in your venue, and you get to actually like develop a pretty solid connection pretty quickly because of that. But that also means that on the other end of that spectrum, if it's a bad connection, you have nowhere to run. That bar is only a couple of meters wide. You really don't have a ton of room.
Yeah.
And so when I get harassed or yelled at or mentioned a bunch of expletives to, or given death threats, or, you know, attacked with a chair, like the amount of violence and open hostility and just general ridiculousness that nobody would ever get away with in pretty much any other scenario other than like nightlife and alcohol and debauchery is ridiculous. And I just have to sit there through the whole thing. And it was a lot of those threats of violence or pieces of harassment or just general threats that just made me really uncomfortable, because at a certain point there is no one coming to save you. You know, the police are already overworked running up and down the street. You're sort of there to fend for yourself. And if your coworkers aren't going to do it, or your friends aren't going to do it, or you're not going to do it, then you're kind of at the mercy of whoever decides to be a shithead that day.
Yeah. No, I get you. And I think there was times, and I reckon that night that we had first hung out, I was in that bar by myself.
Yeah.
And you just kind of like, and that was the same thing. I worked in a cocktail bar. So we're technically considered a mixologist where you make weird cocktails and some have fire on them and you're lighting things on and you're doing a show for people. But you have that audience. I'd never really had extremely bad experiences in the bar. I think as a female being on my own, that's when I had bad experiences. Which was like guys coming up and thinking that if they tip me $50 or $100 that would lead into something by the end of the night, but it doesn't. And then when they come back and ask for the tips because they haven't got anything back. Yeah.
Yeah. look, I think that whole atmosphere is probably just the heightened version of everything I've been complaining about. You know, it's super transactional, super selfish, super dehumanizing. And the light of day is a lot different. You know, going out and meeting people in any other context is a whole world apart from how shitty people can be when alcohol's involved and bad decisions are like the norm.
Absolutely. Do you find that when you worked in a bar, I was actually at the moment, I was talking to my old bar manager. We'd been writing music together like the last couple of days, which I shouldn't say, but who cares? And I was saying to him before that, you know, do you believe that because working in a bar and seeing a lot of people drunk and here and there and being messy and sloppy, do you think that put you off of drinking? I have the same question for you.
No, I don't. I think that involving myself in those environments and being one of those people might have affected how much I want to drink or how much I want to be in those environments.
Mm-hmm.
But just watching other people do it, like if someone else goes and crashes their car into a stovey pole, like, you know, down the road from me or like up the road from my house, for example, that doesn't make me want to drive less.
Yeah.
Just because somebody's doing shitty stuff or making bad decisions or doing something that I wouldn't do with something else that I'm partial to,
mm-hmm.
doesn't change my opinion on my own consumption or my own habits with that.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's a good way to look at it. I personally, for a while, it did put me off because you just smell like liquor every single time you go home because you spill it over yourself or you drop a glass or whatever it may be. But I think this year, like hitting sobriety and not like drinking at all and making sure that I'm putting different aspects of my life, like prioritizing different things and not drinking anymore, has made me a better person.
Mm.
But also, I wasn't a big drinker in the beginning. When I was working in the bar, I was drinking less. I was tasting stuff to make sure that my cocktails were 100%.
Hey, that's how it starts.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know what it was, but that was my thing. Just making sure I grabbed a spoon, taste, yep, cool. All right, it's exactly what it needs to be. But I'm glad now I can solemnly sit here and I don't miss drinking. I don't miss being sloppy. I don't miss being aggressive or angry. Like, the amount of times of like starting arguments or fights because somebody looked at me the wrong way, or, you know, just being disgusting in the ways of like not having any standards for myself or not knowing when to stop. That's when I was like, all right, that's it. I'm cutting it off. I'm not drinking anymore. And I think it's been the best decision I've made. I feel better.
Yeah.
I feel better. I feel cleansed.
On the whole, most people are probably going to feel a lot better if they either remove drinking completely or find a way to cut it down to like 20% of what they were doing. You know, if they had a pretty steady habit, I think changing that will be a lot better for them.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I don't generally try and throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
You know, like if I go on 5 bad dates in a row and the women are all really shitty and they, you know, do crappy things and they use me for money or attention or whatever, and I have just, you know, an overall really negative experience. If I decide to like swear off women after that fact, it's like, well, you know, maybe that's not the best decision. Maybe that logic doesn't actually hold up.
Yeah.
At a certain point, it's like an issue of execution or an issue of, you know, how you're going about doing whatever you're doing or using whatever you're using.
Yeah, I think maybe in the near future, it might resort to like being able to go out and have a cocktail with the girls and stuff like that. But right now, don't want it. Don't want to touch it. Don't want to be involved in it. I've, you know, you met me in my partying stage. You knew what I was like. I was not bad, but I wasn't the worst either. I was just sloppy.
I mean, that's how most people are when they're drunk.
Yeah, but you just, it's not the standard that I want to withhold with myself. And especially getting serious in type of different industries or what I'm doing, I don't want to be that face of that. I want to be like Sober Sally, you know? But I think it's good to highlight things. I also wanted to ask for your perspective on this as well. For people that are going out there and wanting to date after a bad relationship or maybe after a big ego hit, maybe they've gone on Tinder, they've swiped, they feel like they're not themselves anymore, what would be some advice for people to revolve themselves? Is that the
revitalize their interests?
Revitalize their interests, that's it. And sort of like get back out there and be confident in themselves. Do you have any sort of tips, recommendations, sort of, I don't know, anything? What comes to your mind?
A lot of it's really boring advice, to be honest with you. It's there's no one big hack for, you know, getting over rejection or getting over breakups or getting over heartbreak, just as much as there's not a hack for doing a lot of things that are really hard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people would probably do really well if they were able to focus on some of the mental health outcomes that these things create. Like, it's difficult to sort of take the symptoms and the cause and separate them a little bit, but if you're issues with rejection or your issues with your breakup have caused some really bad anxiety for you, you can deal with the anxiety separately from the actual like memories or the history of that breakup and try and move that anxiety away or find better channels to sort of, you know, stop those symptoms from affecting you and then move on in your future without it being like conflicting or interrelated issues. And I would say that's pretty much just how I would go about it, is just try and take stock of what those issues in your life have done to you and what they've caused you and try and find a way to separate them so they're not affecting what's happening to you in the future.
Because sometimes, and you would know this from helping me out in the past and sort of being involved in the bad parts of my life, separating that emotion with like memories and everything is the hardest part.
Absolutely.
It's the hardest thing, and it doesn't take 6 months, it doesn't take 7 months, it doesn't take a year. There's no time period specifically of when that changes for you. It's just one day you wake up and it's not as painful.
You're never going to get over your baggage. You're never going to fully just like cure yourself of these sort of things that have been left with you, but they will hurt less one day. You will just have to feel those feelings until you stop feeling them anymore. And there is a big difference between going into a relationship and acknowledging that you have baggage and going into a relationship and putting that baggage on the other person.
Yeah.
If I put standards that I've created for myself by my past experiences onto a new person, that's unfair. That's not what that person deserved. If I acknowledge that those are things that I think and feel and have issues with and try and make sure that they don't come up in my new relationship, or if they do, I have an appropriate way of dealing with them,
yeah,
that's fine. That's healthy. That's normal. That's how most people do it.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's a really good perspective. I also think, and it sounds silly, and I don't know if you do it, so this is me technically asking you the question, but journaling really helped me to be able to sort of not have the thoughts up here and write them down on paper and really indulge in my emotions and what's making me upset and why it's making me upset has helped to release so much negativity, especially people in my life. And you would get this as well, that you put a lot of money into, you put a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of emotion into something for it to be nothing, and you feel like you're left in this loop of like, oh, this emotion, oh, you know, you kind of go back and forth, you contemplate things. Writing that journal out, writing that last hurrah was definitely a way to like separate the emotion for me.
Mm.
Some people, like, you can even believe in journaling or not, but journaling to me is something that I really hold near and dear to my heart, because it has to help release or like highlight situations that necessarily I didn't realize I was being used until I was writing all the negative things, and the negative things were outweighing the good things. And I was like, fuck, all right, actually, now that I take a step back, I realize that I do a lot for this person. You know, I do this, I do that. Where is this energy coming back? It's not. So it's not benefiting me in some way. And it doesn't have to always benefit you in some way. But if it's not that 50-50, I feel like it's not. If you're giving 80 and that person's potentially giving 20%, and there's no other reason to it, I believe that it's okay to like write it out, journal it, and release it. See you later. I'm very much, that's you, and you're looking at me so funny there, and I know, but that's how I dealt with it. That's how I really separated that sort of anger, I guess, because you would have got that when we were seeing each other in the beginning of like, you're not really reciprocating this energy, and I don't really know where your head's at. Do you remember that conversation we had?
Yeah, I do.
And it was sort of like, back then I was just like chasing and chasing and chasing for what, you know, and it's not for you, it's other situations in my life. Whereas I journal it out, I really write everything down, I get my emotions out without speaking to that person. I give that person an opportunity to come back. That person doesn't step up, they step down, then I move away.
Mm-hmm.
It's a healthy way of how I deal with it now. But
yeah. And everyone's process for that kind of thing is going to be their own, that they've decided that they want to do and how they want to value their time or their energy or their, you know, reciprocative relationships.
Yeah.
As far as journaling is concerned, I don't think many people know this. This isn't super common knowledge, but I wrote journals for months, if not years, before I decided to do anything public facing. Mm-hmm. I started writing not to publish for other people, but for myself. I have probably about 150 pages of Google Docs and notes, and I think my Obsidian folder is about 200,000 words at this point.
Yeah.
Of just random scribblings and notes and different bits and pieces that I cared about enough to try and write down and process.
Mm-hmm.
And the science behind that is actually pretty conclusive. It's not really something that you either believe in or you don't. There is just actual science to determine that if you spend time doing nothing other than just writing down outcomes and emotions and feelings and things that have happened to you or things that you want to try and get off your mind, like that is a way that the brain actually processes a lot of those events and emotions. And that's just a way of getting through those. Same as it would be going for a walk or just sitting and staring at a wall. You're giving your brain space to decompress in a lot of those bad ways and just process a lot of those negative or positive emotions.
Yeah, but it's good to, and it doesn't, journaling, if you're new to journaling or if you want to get into journaling or whatever it may be, it doesn't always, like you just said, it doesn't have to always focus on the negative aspects of your life. You can really be happy. Like if you did something for yourself and you want to journal about it because it made you feel good, at least you can go back and reread that note of why you felt good about that situation.
Yeah. I had a really turbulent life, so there was always something for me to write about my drama and my shenanigans. But yeah, there's a good chunk of those journal entries that are just pretty medium. It was like, oh, I woke up, I felt okay. I went to the gym. That was good. I came home. I went to bed. That was it. That was my day. I felt all right about it. I'm not bad. I'm not good. I'm just medium. Yeah. And I'd look back at those and I'd see trends. I'd be like, oh, was I happy this week? Or was I unhappy? Was I just sort of, you know, treading water? Like what was the common themes? And, you know, the first journal entry I ever wrote was like 3 or 4 years ago now. And I can't even go back and read it. It was that poorly constructed and full of all of these weird analogies and different little, you know, literary devices that I just couldn't, you know, stomach going back to at any point. So I had to put a cover page on my journal so I didn't have to look at it every time I opened the document up.
See, my first journal entry was about the concept of karma and why it was so important. Because, like, and I don't know if you've ever been in this mindset or whatever, or maybe it wasn't the best mindset, but you meet someone, they really hurt you or they do something that's really bad and you think, oh, when is their karma going to come or what's going to happen? And I was like, I used to, my first journal entry was about this girl that I knew for ages and she was a horrible friend. You meet people in your life and you think that they are the best friend ever and they do everything for you because it's so like here and there, and then all of a sudden it's just like, oh, I don't really want to be friends with you anymore. You're not a nice person. And I remember thinking, when is this girl going to get a karma? And I pull up at a, and it's so funny, but I pull up at a car wash and I'm just shamming my car after washing it just to make sure it's nice and clean. And I see her and she had this mum in her life, her mum, but her mum was not like her mum. It was like her sister, if that makes sense. Like, I'm a cool mum, but yeah, like, yeah. I'm not really being a mum. I'm just sitting there and drinking and expecting you to take care of the kids that I gave birth to. And I used to think, and I, you know, I used to go back and forth of this, like, when is her karma coming? Rah, 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 rah. And in that moment, and I know this sounds terrible, but you can have your silent wins or whatever. Her karma is not going to be, you know, potentially getting ugly or something physical or gaining a lot of weight, or maybe it's a bad breakup, or maybe it's she stubs her toe 14 times in one day. I don't know. It's not going to be like that. Her karma for the rest of her life, and I didn't need to see it until that moment, was her mum. It will always be her karma. It's her lifelong karma. And it's horrible to say that, but it was like a realization point. And that's when I wanted to start journaling, because I was like, I have all these things that I want to say, but I want to get them down and I want to talk about them and write them, because if I don't, then I feel like I'm just going to keep treading water.
Mm. Yeah, it's one of the things that is most universally recommended to try and get through stuff or deal with stuff or try and productively put things behind you, I guess.
Mm.
And that can be for, yeah, good, bad, or all the neutral.
And that's why it also, I haven't been friends with these people, but journaling about other things that have upset you previously is a good way to just bring it to the surface and let it go.
Yeah.
And I, you know, relationships and friendships that I've had years ago, right, they're in that journal. If you know me and we've fallen out or whatever, you've been in that journal because it's been a release for me in some way. And it's never negative and I don't wish anything upon anyone. It's just so I can sort of, those emotions, instead of them being here, airy-fairy, they're actually on a page and written out. So as we're coming to the end, I also want to give you the opportunity to talk about a project that you've been working on. And I think it'll be really good because you can get it eventually. Is that right?
Yes, yes, you can. I mean, technically you can get it now, but not in a finished state. It's, well, so for context, I've been working on a book, my first book since December, I think 2022, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So the manuscript's nearing some sort of place where I'm relatively happy with it. It's trucking along, you know, mm-hmm. these things take time, but is what it is. But either way, the pre-order for it is live and ready to go at my website, caneparish.com. The book is called I'm Sorry I Egged Your House.
Love it.
That
love
wasn't
it.
Very thoughtful of me. And I really like that title. It's a, yeah, really meaningful tale of just, you know, my life and how I came to be and the steps that I had to take in order to be where I am now and why I feel like that's something that's valuable to share with other people.
It's so nice. And when you first told me, I was like, I'm going to cry. I'm so happy. I'm so blessed that you get to be able to, everything that you worked on in the years and who you are as an individual and all your experiences, to be able to put that in a book and people laugh and maybe they won't get it and maybe they do. And if they do get it, that's going to be some comfort to them. Because I mean, at one point in your life, you've egged someone's house or you've done something bad to somebody.
To be clear, that my house got egged, so it wasn't me doing it to someone. I am the victim here. Thank you very much.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I just wanted to put that on the record just in case anybody...
Spoilers.
Well, sucks to suck.
But you know what I mean? And I feel like it's going to be a massive start to your career and what you're wanting to achieve. And I think when people hear you on this podcast, it's just a stepping stone for you and your career and what you're wanting to do. And I think that you're well educated, you know what you want in life, and you're going to achieve all the things that you wish to achieve.
That's really lovely.
Ah, thank you.
I wasn't expecting it to get so wholesome towards the end there, but that's really nice of you to say. Thank you so much.
You played such a massive part of my life. And I think if you're writing how you speak and how you present yourself, if you can provide advice for people all the time, or you know, be open to that sort of stuff and writing a book about your experiences, I think it's going to relate to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I think that they will get something out of it. But I'm really excited. I can't wait to read it. I'm not the biggest book reader, but is it audiobook?
It will be, yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to purchase. I want to listen to it while I'm at work, put the headphones in, tell people not to come into my office. Fuck off. I'm listening to a book. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so eventually I want to do physical, audio, and digital.
Yeah.
And for those that are not in a position to or don't have any interest in buying a whole book, I have, as of this recording, about 40 different articles on all sorts of things about all kinds of relationships and all sort of bits and pieces interpersonal. So if anything interests you, please feel free to check it out. Otherwise, you know, do what you gotta do.
Now I feel like I want to purchase the book just so I can have it on the shelf. On display. You gotta put it up somewhere here on like on your wall.
If I can con my landlord into letting me hang up a hook somewhere, which is easier said than done, I will frame a copy and I'll chuck one up.
If I get one, will you sign it?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. That's cool. But yeah, as mentioned before, where can we find this book just to pop it
in here? So it's on my website, caneparish.com. That's caneparish.com. The link should be in the header on the homepage, plastered everywhere. I, you know, try and be a little shameless about my promotion. So
no, please give it some love. It's deserving of it. And if you've got something out of today's episode and maybe, you know, you listen to this and it makes you feel not as insane, that's what I achieve to do. And that's why I love doing what I do. I don't have anything else to say. I think we can call it. If you're ready.
Well, I just want to say thank you for having me on. And this was a fun little opportunity. So yeah, I'm grateful.
I'm glad. I literally hinted it to Jordan and I was like, oh, do you want to come on to the podcast? And he was like, yeah, fuck yeah. You're like, why? I've got nothing else to lose. And I'm like, are you sure? And you're like, yeah. And then you messaged me being like, yeah, let's do it. And I was like, all right, cool. We're doing it. We're getting it done. And I'm so glad. I appreciate you. And I think no matter where we are in life, I always want to have a connection with you in some way.
Cool. The feeling's mutual. So yeah. I'm glad we could do this. I'm glad that, you know, we came back to wherever we are. And that's how life works, I guess.
Yeah. We are in a very stable connection now. It feels nice. Yeah, it feels nice. It feels very nice. But thank you. Thank you for listening today. You have been listening to yours truly, Kate. Come date with Kate. And I'll see you next time. Thank you. Bye.